boys and girls, it's time for Development Hell. Woohoo! Episode number 10, or episode number 2 in binary, if you like to count that way. So, yes, we made it to our 10th episode. Our sponsor hasn't dumped us yet. So, I'm stuck again in a hotel room in La Crosse, Wisconsin for yet another tour of duty with Kaplan Professional. So, on this end, it's Chris Archis. And at the other end of the Skype connection, I actually have a decent headset this time, is Ed Funkatron Finkler. Say hi to the internet, Ed.
Hello, internet.
So, episode 10. So, that's almost like a commitment now, wouldn't you say, Ed?
Yeah, we've done 10 episodes, so I think that's kind of a good, like a pretty decent number to get into double digits.
That's right. What we have to find is whatever the highest number that Cal has ever done, because he tends to abandon podcasts like I used to abandon Frameworks.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah.
So we got to find out what's the highest number he ever got to.
Zing!
So, yeah, zing! Oh, snap, there he went. So, so first of all, let's not forget our wonderful sponsor, the fine folks at Engine Yard.
Yay.
I wish I could get some echo on that when I say Engine Yard. Fine purveyors of platform of a service. Take your PHP shit, stick it in a container, and boom, up it goes into Orchestra and Engine Yard's awesome scalable architecture. If you don't want to be bothered doing any sysadmin work like most of us lazy ass developers, Engine Yard and its platform as a service offerings are an awesome way to take care of that part.
Yes, they are.
So, big relaunch at Gimme Bar, huh, Ed?
Yeah, so we, it's the version we pushed out last week was like what we were working on the past 3 or 4 months, I guess. Was it? And it's interesting because it's almost entirely, I think we rewrote almost the whole thing. From a user standpoint, I don't think you notice a lot of difference because we essentially wrote the same application but rewrote it.
And of course, Ed, I have to ask my standard question about Gimme Bar. Did you guys fix searching by tags?
I think we did.
All right. Well, in the interest of not causing a fist fight or the virtual equivalent of a fist fight, I will look at that after we're done recording.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. But that actually, I think, might have gotten fixed. And if it doesn't, I think we're in a better position to actually address it.
So. That's cool, because honestly, in all seriousness, that's the only feature that's been missing from Gimme Bar, because I was grabbing a lot of stuff and assigning tags to it.
Right.
And I just wasn't able to retrieve stuff when searching by tag. So hopefully it's fixed. If not, then I will not so politely remind you that I would like it fixed.
Yes, you should. Because we have tags, so why don't we actually use them? So I know the data is all stored, and it should work. So, yeah. I know a bunch of stuff improved. Like, we fixed a bunch of little quirky things with, like, if you went to a collection, like, if you filter by a collection and then tried to filter by type, it didn't really work before.
Right.
Like, it would
right.
just freak out and not, you know. A bunch of that stuff works a lot better, and it's also like 10 times faster too. So,
well, that's good. So, so let's move on, since I don't want to talk about Gimme Bar anymore. You are going to be talking at OinkPug. Why don't you tell the folks a little bit about that when that's coming up and where you're going to be talking?
Oh yeah. So OinkPug, which is the Ohio, Indiana, Northern Kentucky PHP users group. And they meet in Cincinnati. And so Thursday night, which is, I think, the 19th. Am I right about that? I think that's the 19th.
That sounds about right. Yep.
Yeah. So I'm going to be there at the meetup there to talk about like micro PHP junk and whatever that crap means that I made up and promptly forgot about after a week.
The made up manifesto.
That's yeah. Like, right. Yeah. Right. Okay. I thought I was excited about it till I got bored with it. You know, Elizabeth Naramore, who is a computer, Jesus Christ. You can tell.
Shout out to Elizabeth. What's up, bitches? Because I know that's always her catchphrase.
Yeah, I know. Right. So she, and she does, you know, she's at Engine Yard, and so she got me to come and do this, and so I think it should be pretty cool. So yeah, like if you're kind of near the area, that'd be awesome if you're there.
Do OinkPug charge for their meetings?
Not much, no. If anything. I don't think so. I think they're pretty open. So We'll put a link in the
copious show notes.
Yeah, I probably could find it. Like I posted about it on Twitter, but now
it's okay. We'll put it in the notes.
Right. Hey, I think I found it. So anyway, yeah. So it's I'm kind of excited about that. I think it should be cool.
That is cool. And so a reminder to all our listeners as well, that it looks like both of us are going to be appearing at PHP Tech this year. So for sure, we're going to be doing a recording of Dev Hell when we're there, and we'll be doing one live with alcohol, and God knows what the hell's going to happen, Ed.
Yeah, I know. That should be interesting.
Yeah.
I think that'll be a lot of fun. I'm really glad you were able to come. That'll be cool.
Me too, bro. Me too. Okay, so that also gets on the topic, because we're trying to, for those who don't know, we're trying to rush to this podcast because Ed has requested that we try to get this done in a sane amount of time. So the other thing you're tired, and I understand. You don't have the boundless energy that the grumpy programmer has.
I know. You know, I can tell I'm getting older. Because,
but I'm already older than you, so
yeah, I know. But
you catch up to me, I'll
so
let you know.
Maybe you can tell me if this is normal or not. That
it's totally normal, except the impotent being impotent. That's not normal, Ed.
Yeah, right. No, that's totally weird. There's something wrong with you as a man.
Yeah. Whiskey Web is another thing we were asked to talk about. So Whiskey Web was, if I remember correctly, the timeline was there was going to be this really cool open source web conference in Edinburgh, Scotland, that fell through because of some bullshit with PayPal holding on to all the money that these guys were collecting. So our favorite hard to pronounce person, Joaz, I'm so sorry for butchering your name, but he said, you know what? I can step in and run a conference in the same spot. So it's Whiskey Web, and it's going to be in Edinburgh, Scotland. We will put the actual dates in the show notes. I believe it's in the middle of April. 12th, 13th, 14th sticks in my head for some reason of April.
It says 13th and 14th. I actually got it in front of me.
All right, so it starts on Friday, Friday the 13th.
Excellent day to start it. I'm sure won't be I can picture like a conference room on fire with like – ghosts floating above it.
And a guy in a hockey mask with a machete.
That'd be awesome.
Checking everybody's tickets.
That'd be great. That'd be awesome. So yeah, there's a lot of, it looks like, okay, from looking at these speakers, looks like a lot of white dudes, basically. let's see, Derek Reathens, we know Derek, of course.
It's Reathens. Oh, don't say Reathens, it's Reathens. Derek Reathens.
Then why is there an E?
Dude, it's Dutch. What the fuck? I know you're American and you have a problem with non-American words.
There's Derek. Derek. Let's just say Derek is speaking. Josh.
Eight-time Derek.
You're right. Josh Holmes from Microsoft, who's a really cool guy.
Awesome, dude.
I think he's one of the keynotes, and then David Zulke is the other keynote.
What is the Germans?
Yeah, one time he said it was too stupid to understand Symphony, I think.
To be fair, he's probably right.
Yeah, no, he is right. I never have. That was basically, I just can't understand it. Some other dudes.
We love you, David.
Yeah, but it looks like a real good lineup, I think EngineYard is giving some money for this to make this, help make this happen, so.
Cool.
Oh, yeah, they're the gold sponsor, so then they got some other folks, so.
Yeah, that little detail, they're just the gold sponsor, so. Like, so, yeah, so yeah. If you're in this sound dumb, in the Scotland area.
Yeah, just swing on by.
Swing on by. Well, you know, I'm sure they would love to see you.
There's probably maybe one person in that area who might listen to this.
So. It sounds like a great conference.
Oh, I like your accent. It's much better than I can do.
Great. It's a great day.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right, so that's enough about Whiskey Web because we're not going, so I don't give a shit. Yeah, so let's go on to the next topic. So this is a topic that I said on Twitter that I didn't really want to talk about, but we can talk about it really quick. It was that bullshit PHP is a fractal design that made it on the top of Hacker News. And as usual, the shit-flinging Rubyists and Pythonistas showed up to say, yeah, man, PHP sucks too. So I want to really go over this quick because we talked about it before we started recording. That my thing is like, if you write stupid shit about PHP saying how it sucks and all these inconsistencies, the thing I have to say to you is that, don't you think we know that already? And can we just move past? We know PHP has problems. We know there's inconsistency in parameters. We know that the object model has been hacked together over time. We know that it's easy to write spaghetti code. But you know what? When you I would hazard a guess, and maybe we can talk about this a little bit. I think that if you look at intermediate level PHP developers, and by intermediate, I would say that someone who's had 4 to 5 years experience with PHP, that they are probably more effective with more programming languages than the shit-flinging Rubyists who like to take a dump all over PHP. Simply because to write good PHP takes a lot more discipline than to write good Ruby.
I don't know. It might be. I don't know how you measure that. I think the cool thing about PHP is that it has its stack lets you do a heck of a lot and do that without necessarily having a really strong background, or maybe necessarily having all the certain tools in place or whatever. Just like for building websites, it lets you build it really fast and effectively, and it's really powerful. And it's really, really messy. Yes, that is absolutely the case. And anyone who pays attention to what I talk about will know that it's really frustrating. And I guess for me, it's one thing that it's frustrating that it's messy, but I guess the other thing that bothers me is that I think there's a sort of another issue to get into with where the project is going. And I think that, PHP as a project, is kind of going, and that sort of bugs me a bit. I don't know. I don't know. How do you measure that? But I think it's easier to do, and it's simpler to do a whole lot of tasks in PHP than it is in most other technology stacks.
Yeah, because if you look at it from this point of view too, I think that PHP developers are far, far more likely, experienced PHP guys, I have to always preface that by saying experience, are far more likely to say, oh, I'll incorporate that tool and that tool and that tool, because really, like I've tried to get across to people, PHP is glue, and once you start treating it as glue, it really changes your perspective on how to get stuff done. So we're far more likely to say, we'll have PHP in there, but we'll also have some Java stuff and some Python stuff and some Ruby stuff. It's like whatever it takes to get the job done. We're not going to look at this and say, oh, I only want pure Ruby solutions. I only want pure Python solutions.
Yeah,
a good guy to have about this on sometime, I'm sure we can convince him to come on, is your new coworker, Joel, who him or Travis Swicegood, one of those two guys, is, I think, uniquely positioned to talk a bit about their transition from doing PHP stuff to doing Python, because both those dudes have done a lot of Python work. So, yeah. So to try to whip through this part, because I really don't want to talk about it, because I really find this topic boring. It's like, yeah, asshole, we know that PHP has problems. Why don't you go fuck yourself and go work with your own tools? And you seem to be spending a lot of time being worried about what PHP is doing. Worry about your own shit and go build your own stuff.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of a childish thing to spend much time on. I'm not, like, if you really don't like it, I'm not sure what, I'm not sure what you're saying that a lot of other people haven't said about it. So I'm not sure what you accomplish other than getting a bunch of ego points, you know what I mean? Which I guess is pretty much what Hacker News is for. But
yes, sadly.
I don't know. I just don't see a great benefit to it. I mean, I'll straight up tell people that if they ask me, like, well, what technology should, like, somebody asked me the other day, they hadn't been doing web development in probably several years and kind of thinking about looking at it again, and they were
JavaScript.
Like, yeah, I said the highest, I guess you'd say, like, the thing that would be, that would gain you the most to learn is JavaScript.
Yes.
The other thing is, if people ask me, like, well, I want to learn how to do programming, just period, I want to, I almost always tell them Python as a first programming language.
Well, I don't think you can go too wrong given newbie programmers saying if you want to do a server-side scripting one, that Python's a pretty good choice.
Yeah. It's not like PHP is a bad choice for a lot of things, and you get a lot of shit done with it. So for that, it works really well. I think that, there was a good reminder somebody threw out there where it was like, users And when I'm talking about users here, I'm talking about end users. I'm not talking
yeah,
about.
They don't care what you built your site.
They don't
with.
Give a shit. Nobody gives a shit to get it done or not get it done. And I
some a very small percentage who are probably only fellow programmers will care what the site's built in.
Right, and I guess I'll say I think that you know there's sort of a. I think that PHP, because of the nature of its technology stack, and that's not just the language, that's all the things related to it, and its ubiquity and its accessibility, enables and empowers a whole ton of people to build stuff, to build web stuff who would normally not be able to do it. And I don't.
That's right, and enables them to get paid and make it rain. That's
right.
How it is, bro.
And I just don't. I don't think that they would be able to do it in other stacks that are out there right now. That doesn't mean they're bad, right? It doesn't mean it's, I think that's just the way it is. And I generally don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think it's, you know, anything that they're doing is an end of the world kind of thing. I don't think PHP somehow makes shit worse. No, not really. No. I think at the end of the day, it matters not that much.
Yeah,
I think,
so
I think 6 or 7 years ago, there were issues with PHP's environment, that, like security wise, that I think have really been addressed pretty well. So the out of the box experience is a lot better now with like say 5.3 or something than it was with, like, say, 4.1. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I can agree with you there.
So, I mean, back then, maybe you could almost make that argument, but I think people weren't thinking about that stuff so much. And, it's sort of, I don't know, it's interesting, and this isn't the order we have it in the notes, but I think it segues a little bit. We're talking about, especially, like, security stuff. You know, and we mentioned JavaScript, too. There's this new...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you want to talk about Meteor?
Yeah, there's this new... Okay. Interesting web application stack called Meteor.js.
Yeah,
and,
so I can
yeah,
so
go
I can
ahead,
talk about,
you've looked
I'll
at it more than
it,
I
because,
have.
Yeah, I did look at it. So basically it looks to me that what Meteor.js is a combination of code that sits on the client, so meaning the browser, and then you have a server-side code that runs on top of Node.js. Now, they provide their own kind of hosted environment from the screencast,
right?
But it runs on top of Node. So you could deploy it yourself, run on Node. So it's an attempt to create, I guess, what you could describe as the Rails of Node, in that a platform allowing you to quickly put together a web-based app with Node as the back end and JavaScript as the front end. And the cool thing about the technology is that everything's set up to be synchronized. So here's the thing that gets weird. So I watched the screencast and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. You can pop open a console on the web in JavaScript, and you can type in some commands using Meteor's own library, and you can like insert shit into Mongo, because that's their I guess what you want to call a reference thing that they're using as the data store. So you could actually, with commands in JavaScript, inject data into your application. Now, the first thing I thought was, that's cool, and second thought was, that's fucking insane, because what they have right now is what they're calling a technology preview, and they were called out repeatedly on Twitter and Hacker News about, where's the authentication? There's no way I'm going to allow this application to live anywhere on the internet when people can just, with no permissions, just stuff data into Mongo. And it was cool to watch them during their nicely scripted screencast, where like, oh yeah, check this out. We make this little web app and it automatically syncs between all instances that are running it. If I change this shit, it automatically shows up. And that is cool. And that's kind of a combination of, like, I think Backbone and Knockout do some of that sort of stuff already, where results will bubble back up to the web app when they change on the server side. And I agree, it's a really cool thing. But here's the thing to use a nice old antiquated thing stuck in my craw, was that for all the bleeding and carrying on about how PHP is insecure out of the box, yeah, what do you motherfuckers have to say, the JavaScript guys have to say, about a technology preview without any authentication baked into it? I would love to hear the backpedaling And the justification, because all they've said is, well, dude, it's a technology preview. It's like, you dumb motherfuckers. You really want to show people this thing and tell them, oh, yeah, as for the security thing, don't worry about it, brah. We're going to bake it in later. It's like, no, man. It's like, I'm not touching that thing until there's authentication. And then this also brings around to another thing. It's licensed under the GPL.
Right.
And I had a very lively discussion with some people on Twitter about all this, right? And so the thing is, it looks like from our quick little research, and we must preface this by saying that we're not lawyers and we're not copyright experts, but it looks like it's the GPL version 2 license, which means that if you take this thing and you build a service with it and you do not distribute your application to anybody else, it just runs as a hosted service, you will not be forced to share all the code that you've written with it.
Yeah, because it's V2. I think under V3, I believe that's not the case. So, and that I think that had to have been a choice on their part so that people could build that. But it does mean that if you say build a, I don't know, you build a ticket tracker, you want to be self-hosted or something like that, or some other host, you know, self-hosted web application, then I believe the typical interpretation of GPL in this scenario is that you would have to distribute that application also as GPL V2 in this
Yes,
case.
That's right. The whole thing would be, and you would have to make the source code available to anybody that wanted it. So in that respect, it looks like, okay, just a lot of people have problems with the GPL, and I think it's mainly because they want to be able to take somebody else's shit and just carve it up and use it whatever they want. And I understand that. But I look at it in terms of, I remember Zed Shaw, who you might have heard of.
Yes.
I love Zed Shaw, who talked about his decision to license newer things that he's been doing under the GPL, because what it means is that he gets to have a say over what happens to the tools that he produces. So he can say, like, I'll give it to you for free, but there are some conditions. And if you change anything, I want you to pass those changes on. And I think that's a fair thing. And I argued with Vance Lucas on Twitter about this, where he was complaining about Meteor being licensed GPL. And I'm like, you know what? I said, I lack the willpower to argue about this on Twitter. So I will say this, you don't like the license, don't fucking use it, but don't complain about their choice of using the GPL. In fact, why don't you go, I'm pretty sure that you could probably go and implement your own version of this thing if you really wanted it to, and then license it under BSD or MIT. And I find this interesting too, that the guys who've done it seem to be some MIT guys, or some guys with some associations with MIT. So it's kind of funny. Some of them seem to have a loose affiliation, having gone there, like I saw on the About thing, like one of the guys, typical brilliant programmer guy, but dropped out after 4 months at MIT. So it's like one of these things where, like, I'm kind of surprised that they didn't do it at MIT. But I think the technology is really cool. And once they get the authentication thing under control, that some random fucknut can't open up a JavaScript console and insert data into your database, when they get that resolved, then that'll be a really cool piece of technology. And they want to GPL it. So they're like, if you make any cool changes and you want to share those changes, that the code changes that you made, you're going to have to give those things back to the community. So for that, I will say my hats are off to the Meteor guys for showing some balls and saying, we're going to do this under a license that will force people to give their contributions to the community.
Yeah, it doesn't really, you know, and they express something in there that, you know, they're open to talking about, you know, commercial licensing if you need it. I suspect that in most cases, it's going to work out fine for most businesses.
They'll sell commercial licenses to people.
So it'll be fine. A few thoughts I had about it. I guess the first thing is that it's an interesting technology because I believe that it's a little different than what you would do with, say, with something like Backbone or Knockout right now, because I believe you trigger... It's automatically like, say, triggering server side actions.
Yes.
That happens without very much like tying things together, like without much work on part of the developer.
Yeah. The site seems to say there's also some protocol that they've come up with that they're calling DDP. And being an old wrestling fan, all I can think of is Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That's another problem.
I think it's named after him. But the the second thing is that I mean, this isn't the first time I've seen this. This was There's an old technology Jaxer that I believe the Accelerator guys did. That was
Okay.
like this goes so this goes back a few years. That was very similar.
All right.
And there has been a couple other things like this where it was clearly that it was sort of like you had this observable kind of thing that was happening where you know, again, like you click a button and it basically the framework would automatically bind things to trigger server-side events or vice versa. I have a server-side event automatically triggering a client-side thing. And it's not like you can't write something like that yourself, like by hand. It's just that this sort of takes care of that for you, right? It's the same way that's the difference between, you know, Backbone or Knockout can automatically, say, re-render pieces of the DOM for you based on an action. I mean, you can write that just by hand in jQuery. It's just it saves you writing a bunch of the same event, you know, handling crap all the time, right? So, and doing all that stuff, you know, by hand. So I think it looks pretty interesting. I think the fact that it's a technology preview, but there's no way I would have shipped anything. It didn't have at least a basic authentication system in place. And I understand why they didn't, because authentication is by far one of the hardest things to solve. To do it correctly and to do it in a way that you could apply it to lots of different scenarios, because authentication is a really, you know, big thing to talk about. And that idea of tracking if a user is authenticated and then tracking that back to the server where it's going all the way into your database and inserting data or pulling data out or stuff like that. And how do you keep a couple of things from happening? How do you keep like a CSRF thing from happening where you have a user or you have some malicious website that starts triggering, you know, actions for you on, you know, the site that's, say, running a Meteor app, right? Or any other web app for that matter, right? That's why you have CSRF tokens and stuff like that, nonces to track that kind of stuff. So that to make it extremely difficult to do that. We sort of ran into this with the new Gimme Bar release, because we went with a model that's, you know, vaguely similar in that we have a pretty thick browser side aspect, so that basically all the UI stuff is happening within the browser itself. We're serving up templates, and so so it kicks off where you've just got there's an application, a PHP, a small PHP app written in Slim, the Slim framework, and that serves up like a shell of HTML and you know, a bunch of concatenated JavaScript stuff, which has templates in it and libraries and junk like that, right? And also it does some initial like injecting of data as JS into a script tag, so that you don't have to do this, you know, so that initially you don't have it has that data available to bootstrap you, as opposed to having to start the application and then make a request back to get data, and then you can actually start showing things to the user, right? So it kicks things off faster. So, but other than that, the primary thing that Slim application does is track sessions and CSERF stuff, and then for the sake of and then proxy API requests, right?
Oh, okay.
So the Slim stuff just acts for the most part, for like say 95% of the actions, just acts as a proxy that makes sure that you're actually logged in and that the CSRF nonce matches, and then allows the application to make requests back to our API, right? So it just acts as a proxy for that, basically. Now, there's some stuff you can't do that way because I think it's too dangerous. Interestingly, one of those things is making users. I think it'll be interesting to see how you, in a Meteor application, how you write it like that and allow people to provision users, to create users, and keep it from getting spam so that somebody can't just write some client-side thing that now makes them like 10,000 accounts.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I think it's clear that they are working on the authentication thing because they do mention it, but right. I'm with you on this one. It should be very interesting to see how they handle it.
I'm going in a roundabout way back to this, but the point is, I wouldn't have shipped something that didn't have this in there. That didn't have some base model in it because, honestly, I'm not. I have a lot of difficulty coming up with a. I guess I can think of a few things, but how many web applications am I going to be able to come up with that don't require any kind of authentication?
Very few.
You know, especially something that's supposed to be a complex, you know, client and server interaction thing.
Yeah, and also in this case, too, it's not so much that it's user authentication. It's more like making sure people can't inject data into your application that you don't want to be there.
Well, yeah, because under this technology, I guess it's a technology preview, but I don't know what kind of... I just consider that a really basic thing, and it sort of bothers me a little bit from the principle of this, or in this sense, I should say, that the principle of security as a first level concern or as a first right. order concern, as opposed to something you do afterwards, what they did was they shipped something with that basically, as far as I can tell, without much security at all.
It is cool. Right? Cause you can like see them in the screencast. Dude has the one window open and he's typing in JavaScript console, and then the website is updating and it has data in it now.
Right.
And that is really cool. I really like what they've done here, and I really think that they're on to something. And I also was talked about this very briefly on Twitter, that really I think that I picked a good time to get to try to get acquainted with Node, because it's now Node is now at the point where people are trying to build tools that sit on top of Node that let you quickly build useful web applications.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't want to piss on these guys too much. I just think that I think it's a cool technology. I think if they do a good job of creating a quality environment for developers or I should say a community for developers, you know, I think it sounds like it could do really well. I just think that, you know, I disagree with some of the priority they're putting on some of this stuff here, particularly when it comes down to authorization, authentication, and other security aspects.
Yeah. Okay. Technology preview, sure, but man, they should have done the authentication.
Yeah.
Done
this I might call this more of like a proof of concept, and I don't know the level at which they're kind of pushing this. I think they should have had something in place already. This feels premature. I wouldn't have rolled it out like that, but you know, all right, whatever. You know.
Whatever, bro.
Whatever, man. Whatever floats your boat.
All right. So the next thing we wanted to talk about, since we had enough of this. So, we talked about the GPL stuff.
Yeah.
So let's talk about our next thing on the list here, where we talked about our article that appeared today in one of the venture capitalist Puff websites, about a guy talking about why a remote workforce is bad for startups.
Oh yeah.
So some guy who I've never heard of who has started. Let's see what here. Okay, here's the guy who wrote this article.
Okay.
Shane Mack. And I'm going to read this because I like doing shit like this. So Shane Mack is the director of product at Zarly, and that's Zarly with two A's, kids. He's the founder.
Zarly.
So he's the founder of Hello There, which I've never heard of, and previously spearheaded marketing for Seattle-based Gist, which I've never heard of except in the context, which was sold to BlackBerry. Oh, my God. Rim bought them, so they must be totally shit. So Shane is also an author, a professional musician, voted best wedding band in 2009, and is obsessed with creating technology that can connect people and change the world for the better. So in other words, that tells me absolutely nothing about who this fuckhead is. So let's get into the meat. He has this article, 7 reasons about why if you're a startup, you don't want people to be remote. So I am fully prepared for a takedown of at least 6 of these 7 points, and we can discuss my feelings on the 7th. So
sure.
let's go through these then. So the first – and oh, yes, we will be providing a link to this in the notes. So the first thing is his first reason why everybody needs to be there in the office. And before I get into that, I want to talk about this, how what I really think this is really about, that this is about control freaks – and people who are still stuck in the command and control style of leadership. The idea that if there aren't asses in the seats, nobody is getting work done. And if I cannot see everybody who is working for me, mm-hmm. then they must be screwing around. This is the same thing that people were getting on my case. I talked about on Twitter today that I missed my buddies on the PHP.io channel on Freenode right. because in Kaplan's corporate network, they've blocked down any ports other than port 80, I think. And so I can't SSH out to other servers. I can't connect to my IRC bouncer that lets me talk to my friends on IRC. And people can debate and say it's about trust. And I'm like, whatever, I'm only here for 3 weeks, so I can cope with only talking to these people via other channels. So, mm-hmm. So this is about a control and a trust thing. So his first thing is decisions happen on the fly. So the first excuse is that startups are always making decisions quickly. So the only way that quick decisions can happen is if everybody's in the same room together. So, and he goes on a little bit more about this. The time it takes to set up a meeting, receive an email response, or even convey the correct message is insurmountable when in a hurry. So, okay, bro, you and I have both worked for multiple mm-hmm. startups, yep. okay? I can tell you that a good idea is a good idea, whether everybody's in the same room together or the people who need to discuss it are not in the same room. I mean, I'm tired of hearing this. I'm tired of – perhaps I have a vested interest in this, but I'm tired of hearing about good things can only happen if everybody is in the same place. I mean, I just – Ed, it's like what? It's the second year of the second decade of the 21st century. The tools exist for people to effectively communicate in real time, not using just text. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get it. Why are they fighting? Why are they just fighting? They act like, oh no, bro, everyone's got to be here in the office. Like, why? You want to pay for real estate? You like making somebody else rich so you can have office space? Like, I don't get it how that, because decisions have to be quickly made, they can only be made if everybody's in the same room.
Yeah, I think there's more fundamental issues with this article, but to deal with this thing specifically, and like all of this, I think the things are, yes, it applies in some situations that certain kinds of decisions maybe are made faster in certain kinds of environments and in certain kinds of businesses and certain kinds of when you are in person, and it depends a lot on the people involved. In my experience, particularly in the startup I'm in now, I don't believe that is particularly an issue. I have never felt that, oh, things drug on or decisions, we had to wait a long time to hear from person X or whatever. My experience, in fact, has been that decisions get made a lot faster in the environment I'm in now, and in the couple of years I've been working in remote startups, have happened quite a bit faster than they have. And I think that has more to do with the size of the organization than it has to do with whether somebody is working remote or not. Now, admittedly, the things I've been in, it's been, and I think we've talked about this before, everybody's remote, like all the stuff that I've been doing. And I think that sort of makes a difference, because then everybody's on the same page. Now, if you're a dude who's like, well, we've got some people who are remote and some not, I think that it gets problematic, because I think that people are kind of like, oh, do I really have to, you know, turn on my video camera to talk something, you know, or whatever. I think people don't make the same kind of investment in it sometimes, and that's kind of problematic. But I don't know. I just haven't experienced that. I have an experience where stuff happened too slow because of this. We've been able to snap, and, you know, with a fairly large group of people, you know, six or seven people, and now we've grown, you know, a bit larger. I don't think that's really been a particular issue.
Yeah, okay. I mean, decisions happen on a flight. Dude, they can happen between people typing on IRC or people talking on Skype as well.
We just pick up a phone and call somebody. Yeah, everybody's got their own phone now.
So this much is horseshit. So I think we can say that I don't think that's valid. So their second thing is that hallway conversations are priceless. So I want to be able to discuss things in secret before springing them on people.
Sometimes.
This is what I interpret number two, what I interpret this thing as. This idea that you can't create true serendipity over instant message. See, it's this obsession with you can only have tiny tunnels to communicate with people with, that it's only one-on-one. It's only instant message. It's only one-on-one conversations. Like serendipity, really? So it means some fucknut decides he's going to rebuild the front end in a different templating system without telling you? Is that what we're talking about when we talk about serendipity? So it talks about, it's crazy to think that one discussion can make, break, or change the path of a company. But sometimes those, and this is in quotes, accidental conversations do turn into some magical idea, approach, or direction. Well, whatever, dipshit. Go on to the next.
So there's a couple things I'll say. I do think that in some cases this is, has I can see where this applies in some cases, because I think that I have certainly had the experiences where when you're face to face with people, I find this particularly at conferences, or you're actually all in the same place, like where we've had meetups with the team and stuff like that, that certain aspects of that go faster and they're sort of like more that kind of conversation. I don't know. See, the hallway conversation sounds weird, and I didn't take it as much as I think, but I can see your point where you're going with this, or where you sort of took it from was the idea that you're almost having sort of like private conversations with people. Like you have a one or two, discussion with a guy. Again, I think this gets a lot back to, I think fundamentally there's the thing here is, I think this is the kind of guy who's used to working in an office and working face to face with people. And then he's having difficulty. It comes across to me as that he's having difficulty then integrating with people who are remote. I have felt like when you spend every day in the same situation with that same group of people in group chats, not on IM, and you do daily or multiple weekly stand-up meetings, I don't find that appreciably more challenging than at times I've spent plenty of time working in offices, 10 plus years working in offices. And I did not feel like I had more spontaneity in an office than not. I mean, can I imagine situation? Yeah, but I think it comes down a lot to the people you've got. And
it almost sounds like it sounds to me like really the critical decision to be made when you go with a remote team is that you have to early on decide on a really high bandwidth way of everybody to talk to each other. Because it's such a – I think this guy's being hypocritical in this particular point, because he's like the random conversations are good, but somehow the ability to have random in-person conversation makes everyone feel like they're part of the process and the company. That seems like – so – if I can't have a random face-to-face conversation with a coworker, I'm going to feel disconnected. I think the real thing is that you're hiring the wrong people if they absolutely have to be able to talk to each other. And so let's keep going, because I think the real points get made down below. Yeah. So passion in person is contagious. And this is the one I'm like, by passion mean that convince people to work for free via overtime is how I interpret this one. Because he talks about, what does it say here? Oh, yeah. Also, in-person passion helps to create a social pressure that makes people work better. If the person next to you is working late, it's much easier to ignore if you can't physically see staying in the office longer. Oh, so this gets down to the real thing. Oh, if everybody's not in the same place, I can't give them the bullshit speech about remember your equity, remember your position, remember what we're trying to do. And that's why you're working late while I play Minesweeper.
I think this is complete horseshit, and this is where I became extremely cynical with this, because the idea, I think it's far too often that people start talking about things like passion and commitment and stuff. You know what you should be passionate about? You should be passionate about your friends. and your family and the people you choose to surround yourself with, and not some kind of cockamamie idea about I'm going to change the world because I made some kind of web app that, you know, lets me send Pictionary shit to a friend of mine or some horse shit like that. And it's certainly, no matter, I mean, unless you're fucking curing cancer or solving the Nazi fucking encryption code, there is no justification for you spending 60 or 70 or 80 hours or more a week putting aside your mental and physical health for some bullshit idea that some sucker came up with. I'm sorry, but I don't buy that. And this is the same kind of horseshit where people who would tell you that, oh, they're in this business to change the world or some bullshit like that. You know what you should be thinking about?
Then they should give their equity to charity if they're in it to change the world.
You know, I'm sorry, but that is fucking horseshit. And, yeah, I can think of a few scenarios where it actually does add up. The vast majority of people who try to tell you that stuff are trying to trick you into giving of your time far too freely to indulge their interests and to make them rich. So fuck
that bullshit. That's right,
kids. That's
right. You remember that when you work all this time, you have to decide, are you working to make somebody else rich or are you working to make your own life better? And that's really – I think that boils down to – okay, so next point. Yeah. So then point number four is keeping people in the loop becomes extra work, right? The person who is out of the office may have an amazing perspective, but it is difficult to get that voice transmitted via phone or IM. Oh, I call bullshit on that for sure. Good ideas are good ideas no matter what medium they're expressed in, especially when you're talking about working with technology-based people. You're telling me that I can't via IRC or Campfire or via text channel, a group text channel, I can't communicate? See, this comes down to communication. This is like if you aren't willing to put effort into communicating ideas to people, then I don't think it matters whether you're working in an office setting where everybody's there or you're working remotely. If you cannot tell the people that you are working with, if you cannot explain your idea to somebody via voice or text, then maybe that idea doesn't have enough merit.
Yeah, I think that – I guess I'd say that there are – some folks who do a better job of expressing themselves in these kinds of situations than others. So to some extent, I kind of understand that. To another extent, though, I guess that goes back to what kind of people do you hire?
Yeah,
and do they fit in with the culture that you want
to
have?
Yeah, and this thing here says, too, on top of that, it's hard to keep the people who aren't at the nexus feeling like they make an impact. No, see, that's not my job. It's not my job to feel important. It's whoever's running this whole thing to make sure that everybody is included. So much of this stuff seems to be the manager saying, well, it's not my fault that Poindexter is remote. It's not my fault that Poindexter is feeling like he's not included in the team. You know, no, correction. It is your fault. It is your fault. It's the whole team's fault that they haven't been working as hard as they can to make the people who, for whatever reason, have chosen to work for you but can't work in the office with you for whatever reason, geographic, right, cultural, you know, maybe you're under house arrest and you can't leave your house. But it's like it's not my job to push and complain to be included. It's like you should be accommodating to what I need as well, because I'm already going to be put out by not being there, that I have to work hard to make sure I communicate my ideas properly. So you're basically saying I don't want to put so much effort into communicating.
Well, and I think this gets back to a lot of the language he's using here, I think clearly indicates that the scenario he's imagining is having a group of people who are all face-to-face and then having some people who are remote. I think that I'm not saying that's impossible. I think that does get harder. I think because it's really easy to only pay attention to the people who are in your face. And I don't I think that that's a problem of how you choose to structure your company. And I think that if it's you're not capable of doing that, if you're not capable of keeping the remote folks that you've got in the loop as well as the people who are local, then you should admit you're failing in that area, and if you don't want to hire them, that's fine. But I think it's complete horseshit to say that this now somehow makes a remote workforce bad for startups. It makes it bad for this guy who isn't capable of doing it.
Agreed. All right, so then the next thing that I really think gets down to what he says, Company culture is the key. And this we can actually agree on, but for completely different reasons.
You know, when I read this, all I imagined was that a bunch of folks, like a bunch of red Chinese in jumpsuits all doing exercises out on a courtyard, right? That is exactly what I imagine. Because, you know, call it whatever you want to. That's the kind of stuff they're talking about. You know, for the most part, is they want everybody to kind of act the same way and have the same kind of passion about it. That kind of passion that makes you give more of a shit about what this guy wants to accomplish with his life than what you want to accomplish with your life. And you know, the other people who should be mattering in your life, no, instead, hey, let's give them free beer on Fridays so that they work 80 hours a week or some bullshit.
Yeah,
like that.
So I think they're absolutely right when they say company culture matters, because what it means is that if your company is not committed to treating every worker equally, then you have a problem with your company culture.
Right. It's hard to live and breathe something if you aren't actually breathing the same air. Well, you know, the kind of culture that I want allows people to be their own person and to live their own lives and to have a balanced, enjoyable, and rewarding life, which work is a part of, but by no means the most important thing in it.
Yeah, because it's just that whole, the subtle phrasing that the startup means you have to live and breathe the startup. And it's like, maybe if you're 20 years old and you don't have a family and a mortgage and all the other stuff, it's really easy to say, oh, no worries, bro, I can stay till 8 o'clock to fix this. But at some point, yeah, it doesn't outweigh it.
Yeah, I think...
It doesn't.
Again, it, like the passion stuff he talked about, a lot of this has to do with is how do I get people to do what I want them to do? Right. How do I trick them into thinking that that what I want to accomplish, that what my goals are what their goals should be, that they should be working extra hard for me to accomplish what I want? And that's really the vibe I get out of this article, right?
Yeah, I mean, and let's be clear. I'm not criticizing those who chose to work hard, because I will say, and I can back this up, and I'll tell anybody that whoever I work for, I work as hard as I can on the problems that have been assigned to me to try to figure out solutions to. But yeah, I'm not killing myself for you. I'm killing myself and working hard because I choose to work hard, because I find the problems challenging to solve. But the instant you start trying to convince me that what you want is what I want too, that's when you're going to lose me.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So then the next thing, point number six on here is point number six is one that I sort of agree with, that whiteboards work in real time and space. And I agree, but I disagree, because my experience has been there are lots and lots of tools that let groups of people get together online, and one person has control of a screen and they can draw stuff and everyone can talk in real time about what they're seeing and make suggestions. So whiteboards are good, but if you're saying to me you can only sketch things when people are in an office, I'll say you're an MBA dipshit who I don't want to work for.
Yeah, I don't really 100% buy that. I think that I think that the solutions that are out there are often not as good as it would be to have everybody in the same room to be able to go over
that. But
yeah,
what I'm saying, you can use tools like GoToMeeting and Join Me and other things like where one person can say, hey, buddy, I'm sharing my screen. My current boss at Kaplan does this all the time, draws awesome informative diagrams over Join Me, and I can see I have to sneeze. Hold on.
Right.
Wow.
That's going in the podcast.
I got to stop doing coke while we're recording. So
hey, come on, son.
That's right. I got to save that for afterwards when the strippers show up.
Yes.
So it is possible to do effective diagramming and get feedback in real time. So the whiteboard thing's like, no, just we can skip that one because I don't believe in that. But here's the last one. The last one is the one that I really think is the one that's the most ironic. Mm-hmm. Miscommunication causes too many problems. This guy really wants to convince people that when you have remote workers, the communication is worse than when everybody's in the same place. Dude, having spent 7.5 hours in meetings today at Kaplan while we're trying to plan the next sprint, I can say to you that miscommunication can happen between people sitting 12 inches from each other. So this idea that somehow that good in-person communication good, remote people communication bad, to use your most repeated phrase today, horseshit. Absolute
yeah,
horseshit.
I look, some people are better at it than others, right? And maybe he's not good at it, and that's why he has problems with those kinds of things. I'm not saying it's not challenging. It's not, and if you're not used to it, that it's not, you know, sometimes difficult to learn it, that there's a learning process for how you do this kind of stuff. But I just don't know. You know, I just don't really buy this. I think that I would never suggest that somebody should, if they really want an effective group of people, and you know, that they never have to interact with each other face to face. I think that there's a lot of communication building and understandings and stuff like that that you can do, and it really helps to do those things to have face to face meetings. But yes, I don't necessarily think that. I guess there's a couple things I'll say. I don't necessarily think that means that you have to always be face-to-face. I think that you could do... I think that there are many companies who have had a lot of success doing, say, quarterly things. I think Mozilla does something like that. Now, Mozilla is not a startup, right? But I would say that my experience has been that with smart people who are pretty good at communicating and are self-disciplined, you can absolutely do all of this remotely. If, you know, now maybe you have more trouble with, you know, kids who are just out of college who are maybe more likely to work 80 or 90 hours a week like you want them to on whatever your cockamamie idea is. And, you know, and pay them a barely living wage in the Silicon Valley. I don't, you know, that may be the case. I also think that, you know, I wish that I was closer to a lot of the folks to at least be able to see them, you know, the folks who I work with, to be able to see them more often. I might not feel like I needed to do it every day, maybe once a week or once a month or something like that. But one of the other things that I think this completely ignores is the fact that, and I think Sean summed this up really well, Sean Coates. You know what? I'm going to find what he said because he just put it really well, and I want to quote him exactly. Loading up Twitter.
And score some brownie points with the boss is always good.
He is not my boss.
You're not the boss of me, Coates.
No, he's not. He is not my boss. Like he likes to act like it. But
Canon Finkler.
Yeah, I know, right? So, you know, he was like, well, there's some good points here, but it doesn't account for the fact that sometimes, quote, amazing people, unquote, can't, he emphasizes, all be in the same location. Then he kind of follows up. People seem to be missing my point. Face-to-face is better when it's possible, but remote is way better than impossible because of geography. And I think his point is that, it is good to have those, he kind of talked about accidental conversations, the way that at least Sean puts it, and, you know, not necessarily hallway where you're sort of off in your own channel, but kind of having those conversations, some of that stuff does happen faster face to face, and sometimes you're able to get that across faster. You know, that's great, and I tend to agree with that. It's the same kind of thing you often find, like I said, when I go to a conference, you kind of feel invigorated because you get sort of like this rush of everybody, you know, all the people around you are talking about cool stuff. But I think it also, one of the things is that generally you're around not just all the people who are talking about development crap, but you're also around really smart, good, accomplished, you know, strong, intelligent, cool people. And the fact is that the reason why you only see them at conferences every, you know, if you're lucky, once or twice a year, is because there aren't that many of them, and they generally don't all live in the same place.
That's right.
So, if you want to work with those people, there's a good chance that you're going to have to consider, you know, having a remote relationship. So it's remote working relationship, let me say.
Oh, that's
yeah,
a good
right.
one, man.
Because, you know, it's like I said, it's like, well, if my options are I don't work with this guy at all, or I work within the parameters of a remote setup, I would much rather be under the parameters of a remote setup, right? You know, and that allows you to get people and to work with people you wouldn't normally. So I think to summarize,
I think I can say that it seems to me that the author of this article seems to think that the way that people communicate remotely is just via instant message. And maybe that's been his experience, but yeah. I can tell you that all these years I've worked remotely, instant message is not how you effectively communicate. The effective way to communicate is group chat. Group chat backed with phone calls, with Skype, group chats on Skype, all those stuff. At Kaplan, we use this thing called TeamSpeak, which is comes out of the gaming online gaming communities. So it has text back with the ability to talk to people as well. So I am able to actually talk to the coworkers who I'm not remote with. And so, yeah, right. I can talk to them so I know what they sound like. And definitely because you're talking, you can get across sarcasm, anger, all the gamut of emotions that I love to rush through when describing stuff. So this idea right. that, oh, I have to be in person so I can see body language. It was funny. My boss was saying in another meeting, saying yesterday that at one point he kind of wished that when we were discussing something that he had cameras on everybody.
Right.
So he was saying, so I could see Chris's reaction when I was talking about something. Yeah. And I said, don't worry. I had you on mute and I was rolling my eyes over here.
So,
but the whole thing was like, yeah, perhaps my problem with some of this too is that I'm making the mistake that I try to teach other people not to make, where to try and not assume that everyone else out there is like you. And so because I have the experience working remotely, able to communicate through text and through verbal, that I don't need body language cues to try and determine if somebody likes my idea or not. And so again, I think you hit on the secret sauce to make this work. You hire smart people who are self-disciplined and know how to communicate, and you can get some redonkulous things done. And it doesn't matter that you're all in the same place or whether you all happen to be distributed geographically.
Right, right, yeah.
Hire smart people who can communicate, and it doesn't matter whether they're in the office or they're 2,000 miles away.
I really do think it's good if you can, you know, to get together, and I think it helps.
Oh, I agree too that the occasional get-togethers are good. I believe that those do have value because mm-hmm. they do, despite my disliking of that term at times. Team building actually is important, and when you're making, if you set up your company's flow in such a way that you do get together once a quarter or on a regular basis to decide difficult things, not just do regular work, because I will be honest, the idea of constantly flying into La Crosse just to do regular work has zero appeal, and that's not why I signed up to work remotely. Right. But the idea that we will, when there are important decisions to be made, important systems to be architected, that yes, get the people in one room because those initial discussions will have everybody on the same page, and then we can all then go back to where we do our normal work from and keep going. So yes. Please don't – people listening, don't interpret this as Chris saying he is antisocial and never wants to get together face-to-face with people. I love getting together with my coworkers and having meals and drinks and discussing things because those are all important, because that lets you be something more than just a coder. It lets you become a fucking person and lets you know your other coworkers that you are a person who knows actually how to do things outside of work, because to me, nothing is sadder, and maybe some people won't like this, nothing is sadder than the person who lives, breathes, and eats coding. You need to do something other than fucking write computer programs.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. It helps a lot. Just like walk outside every once in a while. I think that's a good idea.
Like, I think people are actually surprised when I tell them that, like, when I'm here in La Crosse, I go down to the gym and I work out. I do a mile and a half on a treadmill. So,
yeah.
Yeah, people are surprised to hear that. People are surprised to hear that I play slow pitch baseball. It's like, yeah, what, you think I just code 18 hours a day and then crash into my bed? No, man.
No, that shit is lots of fun. So I
it is. All right, so so we have two other things that we wanted to talk about. They're still on the list. How are we doing for time, Ed?
We're kind of going over, but I think at least...
You want to talk about one of these two things, or you want to save that for next time?
You know what? Let's save it for next time. Let's do it next... Maybe we could do it next week. Yeah, let's do that.
All right, so here we are. We're at the end. Episode 10 of Development Hell. Once again, thanks everybody for listening, and thanks again to our awesome sponsor...
Yeah, Engine Yard.
Awesome, awesome platform as a service. If you're into Ruby, they got you covered. If you're into PHP, they threw bricks of $1 bills at the folks from orchestra.io and brought them into the Engine Yard family. So if you have a PHP app, you have an idea, you want to get your idea up into the cloud via a nice self-scaling solution, throw your shit into an Orchestra container and up it goes into Engine Yard's infrastructure, and you can have a nice scalable PHP application.
You got it.
So as always, you can find us online at devhell.info. You can find us on Twitter at dev_hell. As always, you can find me, Chris Arches, as the Grumpy Programmer without a U. You can find Ed as Funkatron with a U. Thanks for listening. Oh, and before I forget, I forgot to announce this before. Oh. But we threw some money at Lone Star PHP to be a community sponsor. Yeah. If you have a podcast, if you have a open source project, you have anything that you want to promote, contact the awesome folks at Lone Star PHP and agree to be a community sponsor, because every little bit of money helps. If you look at the lineup for Lone Star PHP, dude, it is an awesome conference. I cannot believe the speakers that they've got. When I was looking to see who I was up against for some of my talks, this is like a high – for the amount of money that they're charging for Lone Star PHP, you would be stupid to not try and figure out a way to get down to Dallas if you're in the southern part of the United States.
Yeah, awesome, really want to go to that.
It's a shame that you can't go, Ed, but I will be there representing the podcast.
Yeah, you'll throw your set up.
I'll throw my shit up there. So as always, thanks very much for listening, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
See ya.